All right, it's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Plenty to talk about tonight. Baseball just around the corner, the Masters just around the corner. And we've got our Final Four set for NCAA basketball. We'll talk about the Final Four here in just a few minutes. But before we go anywhere, the team that couldn't quite make it there, well, a lot, not even close, really. First game, the Indiana Hoosiers went out to Wichita State. But we have more news on Indiana basketball and what the roster will look like next year than we did last time we were on the air. When we were last on the air, we knew that we were losing Stan Robinson, who was going to transfer presumably closer to his home in Washington, D.C. And by now we know that Max Hotzel will also be transferring and perhaps going back to the California area, which is where he was from. Spent a year in a prep school on the East Coast, but is rumored to be heading back towards his family and looking for more playing time in California. So the Hoosiers were over-signed by two previously because two players had signed already. They're still recruiting at least one big man in the form of Thomas Bryant, possibly one or two others also. So Glass, right now, they're not over-signed anymore. They've got their roster figured out at least for the time being, but they're still looking to bring in players and have offers that are out there. So, over-signed or not right now, they're still recruiting. So that means they're still expecting the possibility at least of some kind of movement. Interestingly, that movement hasn't come from the top end that you think might be looking at the NBA. It hasn't come from the bottom end that you think might be looking for any opportunity, much less an additional opportunity. So I guess the question is, speculatively wise, we've got the whole gamut that we can go with at this point in time.
There you go. And if you were paying attention Saturday during the IHSAA high school basketball tournament, I think it was Jeremiah Johnson from Fox interviewed Yogi Ferrell, who was there giving Park Tudor a pep talk before the 2A game. And I interviewed him, I think it was at halftime. I'm not sure. It doesn't matter when it was. But he asked him, hey, what are you looking forward to in your senior year at Indiana? And Yogi said, oh, it's going to be great. But if I decide to come back and done it, just threw that in there. And again, it's completely opposite than what Stanford Robinson said after the Wichita State game. He said, I'm coming. I'll be back next year. So you've got 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old kids with thoughts running through their heads, with people in their ears, with everything that's going on. But that's what Yogi Ferrell said. It was all over the internet this weekend. So you can take those words for what they are worth. You can put them in your memory bank, but I believe 426, that is whatever in April is the day that underclassmen or such and such must decide if they are going to enter the NBA draft. So that's one angle on that. If you want to read into that, Dave, you can say, why would a guy coming back to school even mention that or drop that out there? I don't know. I can't answer that. That would be a question for Yogi Ferrell. But what it does tell you is maybe that's why Indiana is still recruiting and still looking to move things, because there could still be movement somewhere. There are Indiana's been done playing for what, 10 days? I mean, it hasn't been a month. It's been 2 weeks. It hasn't been
almost
2 weeks. So things happen. Things get moving along. How are you doing in the semester? What's going on with that? What's going to go on with coaches, assistant coaches, transfers on the program? It's a very fluid situation. And for him to say that, I think, caught people's eyes, because you hadn't heard him say, if I come back, before. He said, I'm going to go think about it and talk about it, but he never had done that. So if you want to call it a Freudian slip, if you're on that side of it, or if you just say it's a kid being honest and just it came out, well, that's what you have to deal with right now. So again, another unanswered question. I think that's been the steadiness of what goes on in the offseason at least the last couple of years, is no one's really sure exactly what's going on. Last time around, it was, is Vonleh leaving or not? Vonleh was going to leave the day after the season was over. Was Cody and Vic going to go? Was Vic going to stay one more year? Was he going to go? Did he have to go? And you just wait and you wait and you wait. Then Remy Abel pops up out of nowhere and decides, right, later. When was that? May? June? It was.
I don't think it was over the summer, but you know,
it was. Yeah, it wasn't the day after the season ended because
you saw some movement right after they had their season end meeting. Oh, sure. So that's Max and Stanford. But yeah, I mean, you're right, exactly right. I mean, Remy Abel left
later than that.
It was a month later or so. I mean, it was not right away.
So there's no right or wrong way to quote unquote do this. You just have to pay attention to all of it, and that's what we're trying to do. And that was the big quote unquote story out over the weekend. People said, "Well, Holtzel's going." Well, guess what? You didn't want to sit and wanted more role, just like Stanford didn't want to sit and wanted more role. So it sounds like every year you could make the argument that guys 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 on your roster
aren't going to have a lot of time.
Well, they're not going to have a lot of time, and if they're not patient enough, the angle I'm getting at is if you bring in kids and you tell them any program, not even Indiana, you tell them this is going to happen, that's going to happen, and it doesn't happen, and all they remember was the last year in high school scoring 25 points a game and saying, well, this is easy. I just haven't gotten a chance
to
do it.
Right, they don't want to play more.
Right. Some kids are different in the sense, hey, you've had some injuries. Hey, you just started playing basketball. Hey, we need to get you bigger, faster, stronger, speed. If these other guys think that, well, they've got all the tools and they can play, you're never going to stop them from leaving. And as we talked about last Wednesday, and I don't think that was erroneous, these kids have been told for the last five, six years of their life how great they are, and they don't want to sit around on social media and answer to their friends why they're not playing. They don't want to have to pick up the phone and tell grandma, grandpa, aunt, and uncle, mom, and dad why they can't get on the floor, no matter what the reason is. It could be completely legitimate, could be completely basketball, could be not practicing hard enough. Kids don't want to deal with that because all they've done is played basketball and been told how great they are. And this is a problem that everybody has. Northwestern has a guy leaving today. Purdue's got a guy leaving today.
Scott's leaving Purdue today.
Yeah, exactly right. Guys leave because they don't get the time and they want to do that. And I don't think Indiana's any different in any of that at all. But as you mentioned, what is going to be the next domino in this? Is it going to be Thomas Bryant committing or Thon Maker committing? Or is it going to be Yogi Ferrell going back and saying, well, I did say if, and I've decided not to come back for whatever reason that is, and then you got a whole nother stuff to deal with. So Tom Crean, it was mentioned by Zach Osterman in the Indianapolis Star late last week that he's behind Coach Crean 100%. He's our guy moving forward, and you've seen the coaching carousel move today. So I don't know what to tell you, Dave. It happens this way every spring, and you just put your seatbelt on, and you hope you've got a seat when the music stops.
Speaking of those moves, again, not at Indiana, but Rick Barnes was let go over the weekend at Texas. It took him, what, 2 days, 3 days maximum to find a home, as he is apparently going to be hired or maybe hired at Tennessee.
Yep.
It's just coming out. Shaka Smart is being rumored to be looking into the Texas job already. So
Greg Marshall at Alabama.
Wasting no time there. Greg Marshall, a possibility at Texas and or Alabama, I suppose. So, lots going on right now. A lot of shuffling. Texas doesn't want to lose out on their pick, so they got rid of Rick Barnes over the weekend, even though they apparently told him he would be back. So, a whole bunch going, and certainly you're seeing transfers all over the place. And, you know, look, Max Holtzel, Stanford Robinson, at least with Stanford, top 60 type recruit, clearly thought that maybe he should be getting a little bit more time and needs, I don't know if he needs freedom. I don't know exactly what his game needs because he just looks discombobulated out there. Max Holtzel, it's a little unfortunate because I think he's the guy you could have seen sticking around for 4 years and being an awfully productive player
in
the last couple of years. Yeah, I mean, he's a good shooter. He's a big kid. He needed to put on some weight and some strength, maybe get a little more aggressive on the boards.
Or work at his ball handling and become a 6'7" two guard.
A ball handle, no question about it. But, you know, some potential there. So you lose out on that. But then now you've got your roster at least settled for the time being.
We talked about this on Wednesday. Some guys want to play basketball. Some guys want to make basketball their life. And there's some guys right in the middle that want to show up when it's time to practice, then go study when they're done practicing, then go back to practice when it's time to practice. And if that's not what you do at Indiana and you don't want to do that, well, I can see why guys leave. Jason Spells, WTHR Sports in Indianapolis. Butler extends Chris Holtman. The deal runs through the 2020/2021 season. Tennessee was on his radar. He was talking to them over the weekend. So, again, if you get confused, listen to the music play, and hopefully you got a seat
Here, am I crazy or is this guy a one-year head coach?
He has been a head coach before at Gardner-Webb.
He was, okay.
And he has done that before, and him and Brandon Miller and Gross were all on the staff together. And they were all. I talked to my Butler people this weekend, and they were encouraging the athletic director Collier and the people at Butler to get off the checkbook, because
he didn't have a long-term contract, right? He just took over.
He was the assistant with Brandon Miller when Brandon Miller had the medical whatever, and then they finally decided, hey, that's not going to happen anymore.
But that was in this past offseason, so this was his first year there.
Well, they just determined in February or late January, I think it was, that Miller wasn't going to be the coach of Butler anymore.
Wasn't coming back, yeah.
Yes, so his contract is whatever the assistant contracts were there, and my guess is, like most places, one-year rollers.
Right.
And now that they threw him into that job.
Sure.
Exactly. So if you're a Butler fan, that's good news for you today. At least my Butler buddies up there played up at Butler said that's what they wanted to happen. They were tired of watching their coaches after two or three good seasons go somewhere else because of one simple fact, money.
Yeah.
And now you got a Big East conference. You got a Big East TV deal. You should have some help in that. Butler's not a football school. They don't have all that money. They don't have their own TV network. But they do have some alums that do quite well. And that should be happy news. In the Butler camp.
And hope the Boston Celtics or the LA Lakers don't call.
I don't know
how you compete with that.
Right. Well, it doesn't, you know, and again, that's not that job hasn't just been set back 3 years either in recruiting in Central Indiana.
No.
Especially with all the kids up there. I can start naming off cities and teams up there in Indianapolis that they're all following along inquisitively, and that's going to help the Bulldogs moving forward. So good for them. How about that?
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. We'll talk more basketball when we get back from the break, as we have our Final Four and a surprise here. The Big 12 is not involved, but the Big 10 has got half of them. So we'll talk about that when we get back. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. Programming note, tomorrow night, Joe Smith Sports Talk, live from Yogi's at the corner of 10th and Indiana. He'll have two-time South State champion swimmer Ian Finnerty and the coach Phil Cole, and also All-American wrestler at IU, Taylor Walsh. That's tomorrow at 6 o'clock, live at Yogi's. We'll be back Monday, April Fool's Day. Apropos that we would be on the air on April Fool's Day, 6 o'clock here on Wednesday for that. 333-2665 is the phone number. So the Hoosiers now at 13 scholarships for next year at the moment. And you can put your odds on what happens next. But I'm just telling quotes certainly from Yogi Ferrell over the weekend. No other activity on the bottom of the roster. I think everybody assumes a pair of names down there would be the first two that might be leaving the program, and they are at the moment at least steady on despite some additional recruiting. So we will see. One thing we do know that's still open at this point is that Steve McClain got the UAC job, so there is a job open on the staff at this point. You want that job?
If I was in the basketball coaching world, I would think that would be one that should be quite easy to fill.
Yes.
But Steve McClain and Coach Crean, I wasn't aware of how their relationship was before that, because McClain was always a Western kind of guy.
He was at Wyoming for like 10 or 12 years or something.
And was always out that way. So these guys run into each other at these symposiums and camps. And maybe if you're watching,
I don't know what connection they
Notre Dame football over the weekend, you run into a guy that you think that can help you out down the road. I don't know how that wonderful world works, but we do know, Dave, and we talked about it again last week. And the reason we're rehashing this is because it continues to happen. Is a guy leaves and there's been coaching turnover and player turnover and the churn. I don't know. Is that normal for? Does everybody else look at that and say, hey, this is great? It doesn't happen at Duke. It happens at Kentucky every year. They seem to be just fine with it. So I don't know. It's something that has not produced results for the last 2 years for Indiana. So moving forward, I have every right to be skeptical in the next season because of what's going on. Yes, if you want to tell me the professional level players have left and they have not been replaced with professional level talent, I would argue if you have the first two picks of the four in the NBA draft go, or whatever that was.
Two out of four, yes.
And well, then you get another top 10 pick the next year. That's pretty good. If your name isn't Kentucky, that's pretty good. So it'll be interesting to see how this pans forward. The only date I think you have to know is April 26th. I believe that is the early entry deadline where that's what I'm pretty sure if you put, I don't know if they change this, you put your name and you're gone, right? I don't think they let
no,
you.
No, I think you can go in the process.
I think
and,
you can do that up to that
stand.
Point, and I think that point is the fisher cut bait point because I can look that up. It's not hugely important. We'll jump off that bridge when we come to it. But it's just interesting. And again, it is what college basketball is these days. Louisville just lost three players today. Harrell and Rozier are turning pro. And Anton Gill, who played some good tournament minutes, has decided he's looking for more playing time somewhere else. So it is get on that roller coaster. Make sure that all your arms and legs are inside the ride at all times. Make sure you must be this tall to ride and everything else that goes with that. So hang on, baby. Hang on.
April 26th is listed as the NBA draft early entry eligibility deadline.
Deadline means you can't get in after
eligibility
that.
Eligibility would mean, yeah.
That should be the last. That's the last roll of the dice if you want to do that. So we'll see what's going on as time moves on. But we know, Dave, today's the 30th. As we mentioned, we're back on Wednesday the 1st. So it's not that much time. It's 30 days to get that all figured out.
Nope. Look back at the weekend that was since the entire Sweet 16 and Elite 8 occurred since we were last on the air. The first thing we spoke about when we were talking about the Sweet 16 was could Kentucky get beat, and particularly could they get beat by West Virginia? And they got a rather emphatic no, not so much.
They sure didn't.
West Virginia just could not generate any offense.
They did. And West Virginia's post player had their big time inside scorer had two fouls before there was any points scored in the game. That did not help them at all, and West Virginia ran into the wrong team that night, and they didn't have enough guys that could score, and obviously losing a 6'9", 6'10 guy inside in the first, 54 seconds or whatever it was, that wasn't going to help anything at all. And after a while, it doesn't matter how well-coached you are. You have to play a perfect game, and you have to be able to score. The good news is that's what Notre Dame could do, and Wisconsin can as well.
Well, let's talk about the team that came out of this weekend without winning. That to me was the biggest winner is Notre Dame. I mean, just as far as the stature of that team at the very least after the weekend, because they put it on Wichita State pretty well, especially in that second half.
They did.
And then gave Kentucky everything they could certainly handle. And, you know, one more play down the stretch. They managed to get easy buckets in both games against a pair of really good defensive teams.
But I think Kentucky showed you everything they were made of in the final 236 Notre Dame didn't score another field goal because you clamped down for 2 minutes defensively, and essentially that's what Kentucky did. And all of a sudden, all those easy baskets, all of a sudden they figured out all the switches. All of a sudden they defended how to defend pick and roll. All of a sudden Notre Dame had three possessions to score in, and they didn't score in any of them. And that was a tough part, because if it goes cold against them, there shouldn't be any easy buckets when every other play in the last 3 minutes of a college basketball game is timeout or go to the monitor. There's too much coaching that happens during that time. There's too many good things, or there's too many, if you're on defense, good things that can happen for you because you get a chance to reset. It's worse than football.
Yeah.
It's almost like 30 seconds in between a play. Two guys go for a loose ball. You see it hit the guy in the face and go out of bounds, and they're at the monitor for 3 minutes. So then there's one guy exiting and out there.
They make a call, and they automatically go to the side.
They don't want
to
get it wrong.
And then they've got to explain it to everybody out there. I guess at least during the tournament, they've stopped doing quite that extent of the explanations.
Six timeouts.
But
each team has three timeouts in the last 3 minutes, and you get at least five trips to the monitor. And you know what there is at that time? No flow. And if you want to get Kentucky in a one or two or three possession game where they got to focus for 3 seconds or three possessions, there's no one that's going to beat them. You saw the shots Notre Dame had to even hit to just be in that game.
Yeah.
And Jerry and Grant's 28.5 footer.
Right.
That was the last shot that went in, man.
Yeah. No, they were getting easy baskets when they were in a flow, and the game was more of a full court, and they were able to get the defense moving from side to side and up and down the court. They were, and easy buckets that you don't see very often against Kentucky.
No.
But you're exactly right.
And they just
get them in the half court, and that length really takes over.
It didn't help that Connaughton couldn't shoot it that night. He couldn't find much. Yeah, he had the great dunk. I remember it. I was watching it too. 6 minutes to go, but when it came down to the end. And Grant hit that big three, and then nobody else touched the ball. The last three possessions was Grant, dribble. Yeah. Where have we seen that before? It's hard to talk kids out of that sometimes, especially after you hit a big shot like that. But Kentucky was patient. I thought Kentucky was terrible down the stretch. Carl Towns was 8 of 8. Carl Anthony Towns is 8 of 8, and the last two Kentucky field goals are 27-foot three-pointers.
Yeah.
One deep in the corner and one by Harrison. Harrison gets his pass because he did that last year in the tournament twice.
Sure.
But the point was, Carl Anthony Towns was catching the ball a foot from the basket and laying it in.
Well, and you mentioned on Twitter, I mean, you got Ulis, you got the Harrison thing.
Those are terrible shots.
Neither one of those are in any kind of flow of the offense. It's just
Did the post touch the ball?
I don't think so. No. You pass it. Yeah, you have one high ball screen. You wait 5 seconds to throw it to the guy, and he just chucks one up from 28
feet. The guy that guarded him has four fouls.
That's great play, but it's not a great play.
Towns had 27 points in the game. He was 10 of 12 from the field. He made all his free throws, or most of his free throws. And, again, that's why – if you want to get on Kentucky and Calipari about not being an X and O guy, he showed you. Showed you the last 3 minutes of the game.
He had the defense set. That's kind
of
nice.
But what he does is his talent didn't do what was the most efficient, easy thing they were doing. They shot a bad jumper in the corner, and they shot a terrible – it wasn't terrible in the shot clock situation. It was a bad how-did-we-get-to-that-spot jumper. That went in. And guess what? To be 38-0, you're going to have to make a couple of those along the way.
No kidding.
And that just goes with it because Notre Dame was the better team on that night for about 37 minutes. Yep, and it doesn't matter. No one's going to remember that if Kentucky goes 40-0, because all these teams get a scare every now and again. And Kentucky, well, they're just awfully good.
That was the nightcap on the first night on Saturday night. We'll talk about the first game on Saturday, equally excellent game, when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. Looking at the NCAA, the Sweet 16, Elite 8, and now our Final Four in the West region, feeding into the game against Kentucky in the Final Four. Wisconsin comes out alive. So your first of your two Big Ten teams, and certainly the one that I think everybody expected. Although, tough game against Arizona, tough game against North Carolina before that. But the class, especially on the offensive end of this Wisconsin team, you've seen it all year long. They are, to say they are deliberate makes it sound like they aren't a team that wants to score, but this team likes to score. They're just deliberate in that they're going to make sure that they do the right things and get good shots. They don't turn the ball over very often at all. A little bit of it's, I won't say one-on-one, but certainly some two-man game type of thing.
It's
Sam Decker certainly is a one-on-one guy.
So is Kaminsky. Kaminsky
can make some plays.
Take the ball to the basket. Yeah, what they do
but
is
they're not lacking on offense.
No, they try to isolate sides of the floor where there's the least amount of help. They try to get guys with mismatch issues. They try to get guys going to the basket. And when you got four or five, well, usually five on the floor that can knock down a three-pointer, Hayes, Decker, Kaminsky, Brunson, Koenig, and Gasser can all shoot threes. Well, if you put them all around the perimeter and you choose not to guard them and they knock down shot. Well, that's how they got 55 in the second half against Arizona. They didn't go to the foul line 37 times. They knocked down shots, and they made 8 of 11 threes or whatever. It was ridiculous. Yeah. But Arizona was supposed to be the team that maybe wasn't as good offensively but would lock down and get into you defensively. Look at all the length they have. Look at all the athletes. Charskowski's a monster. He's a man of a mountain in the middle. And you got quick guards and Stanley Johnson in length and Hollis Jefferson. They went on and on and on and on. And Wisconsin beat the doors off in the last 5 minutes of the game. They're out of gas. Yep. They look like they were burned out. Who did Arizona play the game before that? Xavier? That was a good rock fight, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Until a little bit late. Guess what happened? Xavier ran out of scoring late in that game. Why? Well, they just didn't have enough guys to do it. Same thing with Arizona. T.J. McConnell can't shoot the basketball. Line drivers, when they go in, hey, super, no sweat. But when you got a lot of guys, Stanley Johnson disappears in that game. He's a freshman. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson shoots the ball perpendicular to his face. You notice that? He shoots the ball sideways. Yeah. So that guy's not going to knock down some jumpers. So you put some pressure on Gabe York on the perimeter and make them make shots. Yep. And when you didn't, the other thing Wisconsin doesn't get a lot of credit for, Dave, is rebounding. They do have big players, and they do get every loose ball and a lot of rebounds. You don't see teams ping-ponging it off the glass with them. Now, Kentucky might, because Kentucky does that to a lot of people. But Wisconsin scores. They get up and down the court. They make good decisions, usually, with the basketball shooting. The guy that makes the worst decisions for them, interestingly enough, is Kaminsky, because he's trying to get to the line. Mm-hmm. He's got such good feet and good post moves. He almost looks off balance sometimes. And if he just gets that little nudge because he's moving, If he doesn't get the call, he doesn't get the call. But the other worst decision maker on that team, and I'm sorry, Bucky Badger fan, Trayvon Jackson. They won in spite of Trayvon Jackson coming back this weekend. He was he wasn't very good against North Carolina.
He's
a half a step slow.
He looks thick. He looks like he hasn't played in a long time, which is, of course, exactly what happened.
And he missed some free throws late against North Carolina that did not come back to haunt them. If you remember last year, in the Final Four, Jackson had two free throws to give.
These are his first two games back. I mean, we got to give him a break. And the fact that he didn't play a lot of minutes in these two games tells you that he wasn't ready.
Bo Ryan had some stones to throw him in that situation and say, hey, what's going on? If you remember, I think Wisconsin was down six or eight, and they just hitched up the wagon, went on a huge run, and just blew the doors right off the gym. I think, did Miller? No, that was Roy. That was Roy on Thursday night, wasn't it? Anyhow, the stat came up, Wisconsin is 115-3 on Thursday night when leading in the final 5 minutes. They were down 6 or 7 at the time and go on this monster run to lead by 5 at the 5:12 mark. And what'd they do? Well, they closed the game out like they did 116 of 119 times before that.
It was 51-44 with
Carolina, right?
Almost 12 minutes left in the game. That was Carolina.
And then give me the score at 515 or 520.
65-60. Wisconsin.
There you go. They just pound you. 21 points absolutely. In 7 minutes.
Well, look, Sam Decker was a top 15 recruit coming out of high school. He's a junior
now.
This weekend and in this tournament, he's got 87 points in this tournament.
This weekend.
He is on fire. And, you know, we knew Kaminsky could score.
Yeah, he only got 29 against Arizona.
Nigel Hayes, very nice player, inside, outside, no question. I mean, they got a ton of length. But this guy right here, this is the guy that can, without a doubt, create his own shot. A special NBA-style athlete. I mean, yes, Kaminsky is too, and Hayes probably will be. This guy, to me, though, he's what is he at 6'9"? I'm trying to think. Is he a Detlef Schrempf? I mean, is he one of these guys where he's
not
just got
good
the
as
length?
Shooter, but yeah,
and
but what, he handles it, and he goes to the basket, and he rebounds,
he's going one on one with a guy and doing spin moves on top of the 3-point line to get into.
You know
the
why?
Lane.
You know why you love Decker? Because he's getting 13 points and 5 rebounds a game playing next to the National Player of the Year, and you don't hear a peep about how many shots he gets.
Yeah,
you don't see a game where he takes 28 shots. He hit his career high.
Put up 27 if he needs to. Also.
He hit his career high against Carolina in the semifinals for 23. He gets 27 in the regional final, his new career high on the two biggest games of his season. And for a junior, that's all you can ask for the kid. And that and that's what he did. And, yeah, he forced a couple of those threes. And a couple of those threes were late in the shot clock that went in.
Sure.
When it's your day, it's your day in that. But remember, Arizona held Kaminsky to 29. They went through this last year. These teams played each other last year. And Ashley's back, and he could be the difference and all this and that and the other thing. That's fine. Wisconsin attacks you from 5 spots offensively, and that's what makes them very difficult to guard. You know they remind me of? Notre Dame, but a little bit better scoring on the inside.
Let's talk about that for a second.
3-3-3-2-6-6-5
is a phone number.
Shooters,
we don't have to break this down too intensely, but looking
we'll
forward
Wednesday.
To Saturday, we've got Kentucky, we've got Wisconsin. What I like about Wisconsin compared to Notre Dame is it's a team that's equally as good offensively. The difference is they got about 3 or 4 inches at every spot out there. I mean, you talk about that front line of 6'11", 6'9", 6'8". That's a little different looking than what Notre Dame threw out there. And you saw the way Kentucky could ping pong it above their head without Notre Dame. You know, Notre Dame's jumping around like your little brother trying to grab at the ball while you're holding it above your head a little bit on Notre Dame. I don't think they can do that with Wisconsin. The other side of that is Wisconsin isn't likely to fall into what Notre Dame fell into from time to time. That's one guy dribbling around trying to be a hero from here and there.
That's not
their
offense.
They're always going to make the right decisions. They're always going to have it to somebody who can probably create off the dribble. And that's something Notre Dame just really didn't have down the stretch.
Well,
but it absolutely had to have it.
And Notre Dame had no bench. None.
Well, nobody at this point is playing a lot of bench players
if
you look at these games.
Wisconsin can bring on Showalter. They can bring on Jackson.
He barely played. Jackson,
like
we said, looks soft right now. Dukin's the only guy that played a lot of minutes.
So there's three guys that Jackson led them to a Final Four last year.
Oh, sure.
So
nice to have.
You can rely on that to a degree. Showalter came in, gave him a great boost of energy against Carolina. A
couple minutes.
Well, I think it was more than that. It was like 12
or
13.
He played 4 against Arizona.
He did, because they didn't need him, because Koenig wasn't in foul.
It was 8 against North Carolina.
What do you do?
Jackson was 16 on the weekend.
There you go. You got guys that at least have been there and have seen some of this action. I'm not saying it's going to be the difference in the game, but Notre Dame, every guy played 39, 39, 39, 38, 36.
Yeah, right.
So they had no chance. Dukin's at least going to give somebody a break. You can throw Vito Brown in there for a couple minutes to give somebody a break. They've got some options. But what they can do is they can score when their main five's on the field, on the floor. They've got options at every position. And the other thing is they've got options on the perimeter and in the block. for most of those positions. Yeah. Kaminsky isn't one of those stiff guys like Charskuski, who can't leave a 3-foot circle.
Well, they can all step out. I mean, Decker, Hayes, Dukan, and Kaminsky can all be inside players, post you up, or they can take you off the dribble, or they can shoot from three.
And you saw what Notre Dame did to get Kentucky away from the defensive glass. They sent guys to the basket and hoping they would block shots and get offensive rebounds, and they did a pretty good job of doing that. Bo's going to pick up on some of the stuff as well. Wisconsin doesn't shoot it greatly, but what they don't do, Dave, is they don't turn it over and they don't foul. They're not going to get Kentucky into cheap spots, hopefully. And, again, they've had one taste of this. They had a taste last year where they were that close.
Yeah, absolutely.
That close to winning the ball game. So, again, fantastic basketball in the sense, but Arizona just didn't have enough guys who could get their own shot, make their own shot late in that. And Wisconsin did what they've done. Now they're 117-3, Dave, when they lead in the final 5 minutes. Well, that's at the five-minute mark. That's pretty good. Any way you chop it up, and for the second year in a row, Bucky Badger is back to the Final Four.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know how much it means in the Final Four, but getting a guy, as you mentioned, with the experience of Trayvon Jackson to add back into the equation, he does not look ready to play a lot of minutes. He does not look ready to be your starter. Bronson Koenig has played great, but you've got a veteran out there, and a veteran who, what I was impressed with this weekend is I did not see anything really that looked to me like it upset their chemistry, that he tried to do things he wasn't supposed to be doing out there. I didn't see that out of Trayvon Jackson.
I saw it more on Thursday than I did on Saturday.
That's my only concern about throwing him in this late in the equation is you've got something that's been working so well and you bring back a guy that's used to being such a key component. How does he fit back in? Obviously, physically right now, he can't fit back into the same level, so that takes care of a little bit of that for you. But that experience and that quality, that's something nobody adds at this point in the year.
Well, Bo Ryan showed you exactly what he thought of where he was at by playing him in those two games that were really close. Wisconsin trailed for most of the game against, well, not most of it. That was back and forth 3 or 4 points with Carolina. And he's playing, so you didn't want to bring him fresh to Kentucky. I don't think that was on Bo's mind at the time, but if you had a choice to look back at revisionist history and say, hey, are you happy you got him in two games, or did you want him fresh for UK? No, I think getting him on the court and a taste of it already always will help things out. And Wisconsin has done just what you'd hope they would do, leading the Big Ten, leading them to the Final Four. Bo Ryan, hate him, love him, whatever, the proof's in the pudding there. He gets good players that nobody else perhaps wants and does pretty good things with them.
Absolutely. It'll be a barn burner on Saturday in that one. When we get back, we will look at the other side of the bracket. We've got a couple other Final Four teams. Another Big Ten team made it. Shocking. We'll talk about that in just a couple minutes. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. Looking at the rest of the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 weekends. And the winners heading on to the Final Four and making it a second Big Ten team. Half of your Final Four is the Big Ten.
As it should be.
And that is Michigan State, the only non-number one seed. They did not have to face the number one seed, but they did face 2, 3, and 4 on their way to the Final Four. And in particular, the defense of Virginia and the coaching of Rick Pitino and some decent defense there. I'm seeing a trend here, though, out of Michigan State. They show up, they get down about 8 points, they go to halftime. They get yelled at for a little while. Then they stop doing stupid stuff.
Adjustments at halftime?
They end up coming back and winning.
Say, well, they've done this. This is now seven of
these. But they're used to this. So.
Seven of these they've went through. This team has driven Izzo crazy, and for good reason. And they drive you crazy watching.
But they make you happy at the end of the day.
They win. They just make enough plays, and they have enough guys that know their role, and they have a good chemistry. And you don't see Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Naren shooting 25-footers. You don't see guys doing something outside the scope of what they should be doing. It's a very well-oiled machine. And let's see, last year Michigan State lost the regional final to a number 7 team and went on to win the national championship behind a good early point guard named Shabazz Napier. Oh, well, they did it this year with Travis Trice. Weird how that kind of works out, how these number games. Kentucky and Wisconsin played. And then the last time there was an undefeated team, and it was 91 in Indianapolis, and Vegas was here, and Duke had to beat them in the semifinals. have. And you just have all these wonderful connections. But what we've learned about Michigan State is really simple. Who cares if they get beat by in December and January? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you're a Michigan State fan, I got a few of them, and I get an email from my buddy, Bill in Grosse Pointe, who emails me every time after they win and say, I am no longer upset that he is my coach. Because he told me a year and a half ago.
Would he be upset that he was?
After they got beat by, how do you lose to a 7 seed? That's my point. I said, Bill, you got to take a deep breath here, Bill.
No kidding.
And relax. And again, the grass is always greener. Somebody's always doing it better. But if you know anything about Tom Izzo, there's a reason Cliff Alexander doesn't go to Michigan State. There's a reason Jabari Parker doesn't go to Michigan State. There's a reason why. Because he tends to play the game in a different way. And he has you buy into family. He has you buy into the legends of Magic Johnson and Mateen Cleaves and the guys that have come before you and all of that stuff. But what it translates into is halftime adjustments.
Yeah.
Guys, listen and execute. Now, they're good players. It's not like he took this team from the Y.
No, I mean, he's got talent.
But this was the same team that lost at home to Mike Davis in Texas, whatever.
Lost in overtime to Minnesota and made two moronic plays down the stretch.
And they made more of those. They did it twice.
And that's what's amazing about this team. I said this on Twitter over the weekend. What's amazing about this group is they're going to the Final Four, and this is a team that has been making him pull his hair out all year long because their stars, their three stars, continued all year long at some point in time to make absolutely mind-bogglingly stupid decisions and plays.
Well,
and yet here they are.
Yeah. Fix that
here they are.
Sure
they still managed to win 4 straight at this point in time. So all the kudos in the world to Michigan State. They've got the Izzo toughness. I mean, they've got that. They're going to hit the boards. They're going to defend you. And what you like about this team in particular also to keep winning potentially here is that they got at least 2 guys out there, if not 3 or 4, that can hit those big shots from outside to stretch everything on out there. I mean, Travis Trice and Denzel Valentine, sometimes maybe this
fearless.
Isn't a great thing. They are absolutely fearless and have ice water in their veins.
And Dawson's going to get every big rebound and every loose ball and block every shot. And Bryn Forbes knocks down a 3, and you're not paying attention to him because you're worried about the guys you just mentioned. He just goes over in the corner. He might only hit 3 out of 10 over a 2-game span, but if he hits 2 in overtime, that works. Costello and Schilling both foul out in regulation in the first seconds of overtime, so Louisville plays 4.5
minutes.
They
look like the same player, but that's what's great. You got 10 fouls instead of 5.
Schilling's a lot more athletic than Costello. How about the goaltending where Costello goes under the basket, dunks the ball, and Mathiang has his hand through the net, and the ball didn't go through the rim.
And they didn't
and there's
review
three
that.
Officials that just aren't Pat Driscoll, Doug Shouse, and who else? You missed that guy. And I tell you what, a game that was as
Vern
big.
Harris.
A game that was as big and strong as that, they foul Costello out on a push in the back with 2 guys wrestling for 8 seconds in position. And then they put Schilling out with a knee in the bum as Mathiang comes through the lane with elbows going everywhere. So, again, you didn't get the whistle. You didn't get anything. A lot of teams would have folded and gave up. They go in the huddle and say, we're not losing. They come out, knock down some shots, make some important free throws. When all free throws are important. They make some important free throws when it counts. And Louisville did a little bit what Louisville did all year. Made some really bad decisions and shots that didn't go in. Terry Rozier in that game, who turned pro, declared today is going pro, by the way, 6 of 23. 3 of those baskets were breakaway layups. 1, 2, 3. Half his baskets.
Mm-hmm.
He was 3 of 20.
From shooting
the basketball. Yeah. And Montrezl Harrell, he talked all year about how in shape he was and how he's going to work harder in Dawson. How many free throws did he leave in the front rim? Half of them?
4 of 9.
Well, I believe in the second half, it was 2 of 6 at one point or 2 of 7, and I think he split his last couple. All his jumpers were short. How many points did he have in the second half? He ran out of gas.
Yeah.
Michigan State, again. How do they do it, Dave? Well, they just stay within what they do and what works for them. You don't see the panic button down 8, down 10, down not whatever it is. They just get a couple stops. And, they get a couple baskets.
And
get
here's
a couple
here's stops, one thing that's helped Michigan baskets. State along late in the season in particular is that they are no longer their big 3 and throw a couple bodies out there. They played 9 guys almost every night in significant minutes. 8 of the 9 got over got double digit minutes. I mean, we're talking 18 is the smallest.
Yeah,
and
Ellis,
then the ninth Clark. Guy was 8 minutes in this game, so they don't mind throwing these guys out there, using them a lot. And like I said, Schilling and Costello, I know they're not the exact same player, but you throw them out there, they do the same things. I mean, they help you in the same ways. That is, they're big, they're physical, they rebound, they get they're in the right position, they get follow-ups. They do all those sorts of things. Marvin Clark comes in, gives you some real good minutes late in the season. They didn't have some of that out of Clark and Ellison, even Nairn during the course of the season.
And
this is second half of the season type stuff.
They always have guys that are hurt. Trice was always hurt throughout his career.
Yeah, Dawson.
Dawson was always hurt. So it never, again, they all got healthy, and they all had been there and done that, going to a regional final last year and being the ones upset and figured it out. But that's, to me, it's not a surprise. You're right. You beat 2, 3, and 4. What's Izzo now? 13-9 when he's the underseed? It just doesn't even
it's
matter.
Amazing.
It is, because they listen and they execute. And you got to have some talent. I agree with that. And one of their better freshmen, the best kid, tore his foot up.
He played
11 games, and he can't even get a medical redshirt. So they've got that guy coming back as well. But you hope it keeps going, because Duke presents a problem. But Duke, to me, did not look like that world-beating team that everybody makes them out to be against Gonzaga. And Gonzaga, it's 53-51, and Kyle Wiltshire's got a wide-open layup, and he missed it.
And he missed it,
ties the game.
Well, what's interesting about this Duke team,
5 minutes left to
you
go.
Know they've got the talent out there, but I think you're right.
A little scatterbrained out there.
They try to get it to Okafor, but it's not like they concentrate on him down low like Kentucky does with Towns.
Yeah,
I mean, they stick Towns down there in that low block, but Okafor can get pushed out a little bit further, and I don't know. They just look a little more loosey-goosey to me
can't make foul shots either.
No.
That's not a good deal. You got a freshman point guard with Jones, who's a nice, nice player. I get it. Quinn Cook's next to him. Again, I'm not sure on that team, in a tight one, who's getting the ball last.
Yeah.
Because I think you got too many young guys that haven't had to make too many big decisions. Where'd Duke get knocked out last year? Second round Lehigh? First round Lehigh?
It was first round. Wasn't it Mercer last year?
I've lost track of the Lehigh, Mercer, Bucknells, and everything else. And not to say that Duke's a bad team, but there's not a lot of guys to lean on there that have been through some of these great Duke-ness that we've seen over the years. This isn't the Christian Laettner special we're watching in front of us
here. Which is a great 30 for 30,
It was. If you don't like Christian Laettner, it's even better. And the key with Duke right now is you've got Winslow, who can't shoot free throws, but is a wonderful talent. You have Okafor, who can't shoot free throws, who's a wonderful talent. Yeah. You've got what did I just tell you, kid from Minnesota?
Jones. Cook.
Lovely player. Heather
Jones.
But look what they shot against Gonzaga, who's not known for guarding anybody.
37%.
21 of 56.
They actually made their free throws because
Okafor
wasn't on the line.
21 of 56 against a team that's playing games in the 70s and 80s in their conference.
Well, I mean, this is it's got Okafor, but it is a more perimeter-oriented team.
It is.
And you
want
to talk about a team that can take care of Okafor.
Matt Jones can kind of shoot.
It's going to be Michigan State.
But he's a freshman. And they're going to have to be patient, because Michigan State doesn't tend to shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
And Duke would love to play a game like they always do against Carolina, where it's 88-84. They'd love to get into those, but
Michigan State's not going to do that.
Tom Izzo had a great line on Dan Patrick today. I saw it on Twitter. I did not hear it live. He said, what do you think about the matchup? Because I think we have too much respect for Coach K and the boys. I think we're 1-8 against them. Maybe we got too much respect.
Oh, interesting. Well, go out and punch them in the mouth. I mean, not literally, but
four big coaches.
Figuratively.
Three humongous games, no matter whoever the winners are, how this washes itself out. What a great week to maybe take some of the put the shine back on Indianapolis on the right side of the tracks.
Well, no kidding.
Afternoon.
Three number ones and two monster matchups on Saturday.
We'll have
no question
right
about
here.
It. It's going to be a huge weekend, and we're looking forward to it. 333. Well, you don't need the phone number, because we're not going to be
here. 4:30 on Saturday. We'll have it for you.
Hey, folks, we'll be back Wednesday, 6 o'clock, so tune in then tomorrow night. Joe Smith Sports Talk live from Yogi's, also 6 o'clock, right here on WGCL, and we'll talk to you Wednesday.